All right, we are back on the Tea Talk podcast, sitting down in the studio with my co-host Scott McLeod. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Scotty, how are you doing? It's fall golf now. Officially, the weather has turned. We got quarter zip season here. You're wearing yours right now in the studio, looking nice, nice gray.
I didn't even think about that, but I guess automatically, as soon as fall comes on the calendar, boom, away we go.
Like, how many quarter zips do you think you have in your closet?
Like currently, which closet? The quarter zip closet,
the one that your wife like lets you keep all. Like how many?
Oh, quarter zips. Over under probably 20 in there.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Like, and you've been in the golf industry forever, and you get probably 5 a year. And I probably I've been not as long, but I probably got a good 10. And I just ordered 2 more the other day, and the wife's gonna hate that. But
I think the problem was when I used to be in retail and used to own a store. That was probably when it was worse.
So, yeah.
You just sit there and go, oh, I like that one. Yeah. That comes in, just open up a box. Oh, I like that one.
That one's different. It has a line of pink on it.
Yeah, whatever. But you know what? Perfect for the fall. Love this time of year for golf. And I think a lot of other people do. I sent a tweet out this week just with some pictures of some golf courses sort of in fall colors. And quite a reaction to it. Obviously, a lot of people like to play this time of year, not only for the look of the golf courses, condition of the golf courses, maybe a little cooler weather, not as hot on the course, and maybe not quite as busy as well, which a lot of people sort of like. Unfortunately, short hours, so you got to get it in as quickly as you can. But it is a great time of year to play some golf.
It just reminds me of old stories of working at my first ever golf course. And you probably have some good, funny stories of this. But I saw the first course I worked at, the old guys had a standing tee time. It didn't matter. They all knew that maybe 8 of them would show up at 6:30 or 4 of them. And I remember the one morning I had to tell them they had to wait because there was frost. On the greens. And let's call him Larry. Larry's like, oh, I'm not actually playing today. I fell the other day. So I was like, oh, what are you doing then? So Larry noticed there was some mushrooms growing in between the second and third hole. So he just needed to come and ask for my permission so he could go out and pick the mushrooms that he was going to go and cook with. And every time the fall season comes,
that's what you think of.
I think of Larry and wondering if he's still with us, because he was quite old, and if he goes out and gets those mushrooms, or maybe those were his last days. Maybe I never really saw him after that mushroom incident, but every time the fall season comes around, I think of Larry picking his mushrooms at
that is a heck of a story,
at
I'm telling
Lannings
you.
The Lannings Golf and Country Club. Are they at the Lannings Teaching Center? I apologize. Is there a story that when you fall golf, you think back to those pro shop days or something funny?
The one thing I always think of in the fall is that, it's a constant joke that I have when I go into shop, especially this time of year, and I see them being really quiet. And I always joke that I knew it was time for the pro shop to close when the only thing I sold during a day was a bag of chips to myself. So those are lonely days sometimes in the pro shop. The rain coming down sideways is ugly. You just know nobody is going to come out and play. There's always that one guy, who wants to come.
He's there every day.
Yeah, he says he's going to play, but then he goes up one and comes back down 9 and says, forget it or whatever. Yeah. But you got to stick around to keep the shop open just in case the weather turns. But, it doesn't happen. And like I said, you buy yourself a bag of chips, you have to do your cash, and away you go. You close up and go on to another sad fall day.
It's true. Oh, the old pro shop days. I think everyone in the industry has a story of that. If you have a story of you working at the pro shop in the fall in Canada or Northeast America or wherever it's cold, write us in
to our Twitter account,
Instagram, because we'd love to tell those stories on the pod. One place where they don't have to wear their fall sweaters or anything like that is Napa, California. Nice little Safeway Open happening this week up in Napa, as we talked with Martin Trainer last week. A little bit of a home game for him, just about an hour outside of San Francisco. A lot of Canadians on the field with Corey Connors, Roger Sloan, Gligich. I can't even get this guy's name.
You
on
better
it.
Get it right, because we're going to have him on this podcast soon. So
very soon.
He's going to get mad at you if you can't pronounce it.
That's true. Graham Dillette was supposed to play. He unfortunately had to withdraw. He's still on that 23-month layoff
unfortunately.
With that poor back injury.
Yeah, I mean, David Hearn's in the field as well. Hadwin's back and Hughes in the field. Hard to believe. Third event already of the PGA Tour season for 19-20. Already had some interesting winners. Two South Americans have come through and won. We talked about Neiman winning, but, you know, Munoz came through this past week in Mississippi in a playoff with Sungjae Im. That's the first time in the history of the PGA Tour that two different South American PGA Tour players have won back-to-back. I believe someone else, Camila Vajegas, I think, won back-to-back events, but this is two different players. That was back in, like, 2007. So it's kind of neat. It's just another statement of the fact this is a world game, and you know, they're taking advantage of those opportunities where the fields are maybe not quite as strong to get a win. And although this field this week is fairly strong before the PGA Tour starts to head overseas into Asia,
it is the time of year where just if you're betting on golf, like, go to the bottom.
Oh,
and
yeah,
pick like one of those randoms.
There's really some weird
stuff.
Because
that's all it is, right? Yeah. It's like throwing those randoms in. Like this week, I think if you like Tony Romo's like 1500-1, who knows, maybe Tony picks up a
win.
And
we were talking about that a little bit. I did see one book that had actually Tony Romo and John Daly at the same odds.
Well, that's probably fair,
which was wild. And then I know you saw something that was pretty interesting too with our previous guest.
Yeah, former PGA Tour winner paying 1200-1 odds. A PGA Tour winner, 1200-1 odds. I don't know if I can anymore. Have somebody throw money on that. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but this is the time of year where a lot of guys, I mean, whether you like it or not, a lot of guys are showing up because they have to play a certain amount of weeks. Their heart might not actually be in it. The guys where their hearts are in it are those guys that have very limited starts, they have very limited status. They want to make their name for themselves now while they can in these lower fields, so they can lock up their card for the next 2 years. So you want to make some money. My tip, go find these guys at the bottom that are paying high odds. They're probably going to do quite well over the next couple weeks. I'm not too interested, to be honest with you, in the Safeway Open because the Dunhill Links Championship's going on.
Yes.
And it's the good version of that silly AT&T Championship.
It is, definitely.
Because yeah, I love Pebble Beach, but I like the old course way more.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it and you see old course, Kings Barnes, Carnoustie as the trio of golf courses, I mean... Justin Timberlake. Yeah, Justin Timberlake. Is that what you're going on about, Justin Timberlake playing? I saw a video of him teeing off of the old course, and the swing doesn't look too bad. But yeah, the venues themselves, you know, this time of year, it's actually a little cool over there, but, you know, you'll see everybody bundled up, but it's not really about the players that are here, even though there are a lot of celebrities playing. But, you know, those venues themselves, the old course, Kings Barnes and Carnoustie, and, you know, the tour actually was tweeting out getting people to make a choice of how many rounds, if they had 10 that they could play between those three golf courses, how would they divide it up? And, you know, it was a tough battle for some people. I saw some people I know, you know, totally eliminated Carnoustie. At one, I was bugging him, wondering why. And probably because he played very poorly the last time he played there. Other people love, you know, what Mark Parson and Kyle Phillips did at Kings Barnes. I mean, it's an amazing golf course for a modern golf course not far out of St. Andrews. And then of course the old course is the old course, and you know, for anyone to play there and any time that we have a chance to get that, you know, on our screen, that's something to watch.
Give me six rounds at the old course and two and two.
All right.
I think the old course just has that much history. I want six different caddies. I want somebody new each round. And that's, I think you're going to get the best stories out of that. And it's the old course, right?
It is.
You can't really go wrong in any of those. But, yeah, Rory's in the field. His dad's playing. Justin Timberlake's playing. Something to wake up to on Saturday morning and watch a little golf. I did wake up on Sunday morning and watch a little golf from the European Tour. Danny Willett, congrats to this guy. This guy has had a grind of a career over the last little while, ever since he won that Masters. People talking down on this guy, like, what a fluke win since he won. Well, look at him now. He's gone nowhere. Picks up a win at the BMW Championship. And the whole time, no, I've never, like, you and I are in the golf industry. Have you ever heard anyone say a bad thing about this guy? Everyone just says he has the right head on his shoulder. He's just a great guy. And I'm proud of him for picking up that win.
Yeah, not one bit. I mean, everybody really likes this guy. And obviously when he had his win at the Masters, had a young family, you know, had a lot of things going on that year. Very difficult. Obviously, there's so many more pressures that come with being a major champion. And, you know, his game, you know, lagged a little bit there, but he started to do a lot of work on it in the last little while. And I know, especially in putting, his strokes gained in putting was like 10 strokes. It was like plus 10.
That's probably good.
For the, which was amazing. And I know he works with John Graham down in Rochester. I know John. And, you know, they've done a lot of work, and it's obviously paying off. And for him to win this BMW PGA Championship, I think a lot of people were happy about that. Maybe not the guys that he beat, including Rory, who was in the mix there.
I mean, Rory making the weekend was amazing. The guy shot 76 in the first round.
Yeah, for him to fight back and get in there. I mean, that was fun to watch, just for him to fight back. John Rahm was on there, obviously in there for a while, and ended up second, I believe. And, you know, but for Willett to get that win, and that's a big win. That's a big win on the European Tour. And a few of the Americans were over there as well. And we'll see how things translate this week into the Dunhill Links Championship.
Yeah, I'm probably going to watch, just because, especially Sunday. They always end on the old course. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so I'm gonna watch on Sunday. Just watch the old course. We've both been there. Anytime I can bring up that I went to the old course, I'm going to bring it up. I didn't play it, sadly. Have you ever played it?
No, actually, that's the odd part. I've been there a few times, walked it a few times. I spent a week living in St. Andrews, where I just, you know, walked it every night. But it happened to be the summertime, and it was just too busy. So I played the new course a lot. Played Balgove, Eden as well, Stratham. But, you know, just to walk it and be part of it, that's all I really needed. I didn't need golf clubs in my hand to make it special. You know how special the place is. You just need to see it and be there to really appreciate it.
I think you do. You got to get there at some point. What a beautiful town. But as we said, the weather is turning in Canada, and when the weather turns and it gets cold like this, you know, our minds start to change in the sport we tend to watch, and hockey season is just around the corner. And we actually have a great guest on the podcast, played in about 1,200 NHL games, current analyst and color commentator for CBC and Sportsnet, Gary Galley. And this guy is just obsessed with golf.
He really, really is. And I mean, you think about that, how many games he played in the NHL. I'd be curious to know how many golf games he played during that time as well. This guy is definitely passionate about the game of golf, as much as he's knowledgeable in hockey, and obviously was a fantastic player throughout his career, and we're happy to have him as our guest.
We'd like to welcome to the podcast longtime NHLer, playing in over 1,100 games as a defenseman for the Kings, the Bruins, Capitals, Flyers, Sabres, Islanders. Wow, I'm going on for a while there. Picking up close to 600 points and over 1,200 penalty minutes. Currently a color commentator for CBC and Sportsnet, and a golfing nut, Gary Galley. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We are good. A little bit of a suitcase back in your day, eh?
Yeah, I've been known to be called that again and again from time to time. But the way I used to look at it was, as long as I had a place to play, I was still playing in the National Hockey League, and there was not really a bad place to play when you're living out your childhood dreams. So I wore a lot of sweaters, played with a lot of teammates, out of a lot of guys that I've known over the years that I cherish relationships with, and a lot of guys that I teed up with over the years. So it's all good.
Yeah, that's clearly you got it right. I mean, you played a lot of years in LA, so that's not a bad place to play and golf year round. Over your years playing hockey, who are some of your best teammates to play golf with?
You know what? There's so many hockey players, as you know, that play golf, good at it. I mean, there's other sports too. There's, you know, tons of athletes that love to pick up golf. And I think the reason why we love to pick it up so much is because it is so challenging sport. You know, it's sometimes could be such a game of centimeters, where you're striking the ball and where you're going, and so much to learn about the game. And there's so many guys love playing it. And so over the course of the years, you know, from the time I started as a young kid till I got to the National Hockey League, I loved playing golf. So it was like very easy. There was always a number of guys that were going out. Lots of laughs, lots of hoots, lots of missed putts, and lots of change exchanging pockets, but all good at the end of the day. And no one were happy about that.
When did you actually end up falling in love with the game? It sounds like you almost picked up both hockey and golf at the same time.
You know, I was a young kid growing up on the South Shore of Montreal, and I wanted to, my friends, I had some friends that were playing golf. My parents couldn't afford to buy me golf clubs or anything like that. So my grandfather had mentioned that he had an old set of clubs that in the garage, if I wanted to have a look at them and if I wanted to play, I could borrow them. So I went in the garage and these things were ancient. I mean, there was nothing pretty about these things, but it was my opportunity to get out and play with my friends who had joined a local course near where I was living. It was a couple of maybe a 20-minute bus ride. So there we were with our clubs on the bus and everything. And I couldn't afford to join the club. So what would happen was my friends would tee off 3/4 of the way down the fairway. I'd come out of a bush and join them, and that's how my golf started and my love for golf. And we called the course. I remember I called it the Rock Pile because it was just a dog track. But at the end of the day, it's where I learned to play, and it's where my friends and I learned to enjoy the game of golf. And at the young age of 12, 13 years old, so it was a real plus for me, and it really is something I'm really glad that I took up, and I enjoyed it from the moment I started playing it.
How did you progress? I mean, obviously you're a very athletic person, but I mean, how did your golf skills translate?
Well, there were times in my life where golf couldn't be, I couldn't play as much golf as I wanted to, you know, when I started to really hone in on training. I was training, you know, during the summer months, and so I couldn't get out and play as much as I would have liked to. Well, there were times when I started starting a family and young kids, and those things took precedence. So, you know, when I was younger and didn't have some of the responsibilities, I played a lot. And then as I started, you know, playing pro hockey, and, you know, I didn't play as much. And then, you know, as I got close to the end of retired, I've played so much more. I mean, just really enjoy getting out, and my two sons play and my wife plays. So it's become a family thing now, and I really like spending time together. It seemed like I've always had this love-hate relationship where, you know, you play a lot and you start to get really, really good, and then all of a sudden you stop playing and you start to get bad, then you got to get good again. And I just wish that I understood the game better at a younger age. I think I played the game in a lot of cases maybe too aggressively and didn't really manage the course and things that I think I would have loved to have had the knowledge of back then that I do have now. And so I play the course and I play the game quite a bit differently. And I try to teach that to my kids, but they don't listen to me either. So they just go ahead and beat on it. So it's one of those things you got to learn on your own.
Well, word is you played quite often this summer. How's the game shaping up nowadays heading into, I mean, do you think you play more often during the hockey season when you're traveling on the road?
I don't get out as much on the road, you know, because obviously the winter months and I predominantly in the East Coast. So it's not a lot of opportunity, but from now and then I get out, get south and get out to California and stuff, and I'll jump on. Last year I had the great opportunity to play Toscana out in Palm Desert, and beautiful 2 18-hole Jack Nicklaus golf courses. I've been to the desert many and many a times. Love playing golf out there. There's just some such beautiful scenery, and the courses are challenging and a lot of fun. And so I do get out from time to time. During the year, the travel and the East Coast and the weather just kind of gets in the way of things. But, you know, that's why, like, I'll play from, you know, as soon as the course is open, I'll start playing. And of course, I'll go right till the end of October, beginning of November. As long as the course is open, I'll get my toque on and a couple of layers, and I'll go out and I'll play. Oftentimes, I'll find myself, you know, alone on the golf course, just ripping through it, you know. But I just enjoy being out there in the elements, and I enjoy trying to challenge myself to get better and better. This year, you know, for the first time, I've made some adjustments. I went and got some help and had somebody look at my game and look at a few different things. And Kevin Hame was the guy that I went to. He's a friend of mine and somebody that I really like his insight on the game. And he really helped me in a lot of areas. And I've been able to get my score more consistent and steadily, you know, in the high 70s and in the low 80s. And I think that's been a real big plus for me as I've moved forward in the game. And a lot of it has just been consistency out of the tee box. And that's really been my biggest issue over the last 5 years. And I've seemed to have found a little bit of grace there now. And I've seemed to found opportunity to not lose silly strokes, so to speak. You know, when you hit the ball, you know, a couple hundred yards off the tee, you know, you can keep yourself out of trouble just from lack of yardage. But when you're hitting the ball, you know, 285, 295, if it goes 30, 40 yards right or left, you're going to find trouble. So it's about keeping the ball ball in play and slowing my swing down and just more connection on the ball. And I think it's made a big help.
Well, we're obviously a Canadian podcast. We know Kevin quite well. Whereabouts are you playing right now? Are you still residing in the Ottawa area? Do you want to give a shout out to your home track these days?
You know, I don't belong to any particular course, but you know, I play a bunch of different courses. One of my favorites, of course, is Rideau View out in Manitic. The guys out there are always fantastic, and the course is always in fantastic shape. I love playing out there. You know, I play Lochmarsh a lot. That's close to where I live. Marshes, Lochmarsh, are right around my neck of the woods. I live in the West End, and so those are. I remember when Lochmarsh first opened, when Mark Fuller and the remember. I went to school with Tony, so we were right there on the day it opened, and I've been playing it ever since and always love playing that track. And certainly Kanata Lakes, when you get a chance to get out there, and, you know, at Greensmere, Belmont Way, I really enjoy getting out and playing there. So I move around. Stonebridge is a course I'll dabble into from time to time. All really nice golf courses, all more than challenging enough. If you get to the back tee, bite off and I certainly am really lucky that we have so many courses around us.
Now, you mentioned getting to the desert and playing some golf there. Obviously, you know, being on the road for so much time over the years, you must have played some special golf courses. Any particular ones stand out, maybe on a work trip or maybe for a fun trip?
Last year, I went down to the desert and on a week and a half break I had in between games, there was a bye weeks and stuff going on. And I took off down there with my son, my youngest son, Blake. And we went to a Laker game. We went to a Kings game. He was born in California. So when I was playing for the Kings, and then we went down to Toscana, played down there, like I mentioned. And those are really, you know, trips that are at the end of the season. I'm on the road for 6 weeks in the playoffs. When I get home, we'll get on a bird and head down to the desert. It's one of the places. When you get down there and you experience the, you know, kind of surrounding the desert area and the palm trees, and you get on the Tom Weisskopf course, and it's just incredible. The Weisskopf course, I was so amazed that 14 out of 18 holes had water on them, and I was like, I couldn't believe how challenging it was and how tiring it was to go through an 18-hole round trying to avoid water for 14 out of 18 holes, and wasn't very successful all in all. But just really liked the atmosphere. Yeah, it's 100 degrees, 100 and 105, you know, but it's a dry heat. It's very manageable. You get up in the morning at 7:30, 8 o'clock. You head out on the course. You're back by 1 o'clock, and you're able to, you know, sit out by the pool and do some things with family and friends and stuff. But you can always get your golf in. That's what I really love about it.
Back in your day, obviously playing hockey, how often were you playing? While on the road or at home, did you travel with the clubs? Were there a couple guys that may have brought them on the road?
There, you know, unlike baseball, where you have your relievers and players and athletes like that who I've gotten to know over the years, and where these guys can get on the road and they've got days off where they're just pitching lightly and they can get on the course and play. These guys have clubs at 8, 10, 12 different courses around, you know, where they just drop in and play. Hockey's a bit different, you know. You go into a city, you play the game, you fly out right after. You're landing in the next city. Normally, you've got to get up. You've got meetings. You've got, you know, you've got to get your food intake in. You've got to get your rest in. The one thing that it doesn't account for is to go out and rip around a golf course. And, you know, because even though it looks like, oh, you get in a cart if you want, you don't have to exert too much energy, you know, it's still energy that an 82-game schedule is just, it can wear you down. And when you have opportunity to rest, you have to take it, you know, and that was the one thing. The odd time during a playoff round, if you were to eliminate a team quickly and have 4, 5, 6 day break, oftentimes the guys would gather together and get out and play some golf for a couple of days. And last year I flew into Boston for a playoff series, and a good friend of mine that I played with down there, Ray Bork, was playing that day, and he goes, look, get down here. I got a set of clubs for you. You can come play. So I went down and jumped on the course with them at Ferncroft and played and had a wonderful day, met some wonderful people. And so sometimes it's just golf just kind of jumps on you and you just take advantage of it. But as a player, I think, you know, I was a very focused player. I like to I like to make sure that I was getting my rest and proper nutrition and stuff like that. So it was hard to really squeeze in golf. From time to time, guys would jump out on a day off and go play. But I never did that.
Jeff O'Neill, he's now on with TSN. He tells stories about you catch the guy that clearly went out golfing in between the morning skate and the afternoon game. He comes back in with a sunburn or a tan. You got any good stories of teammates sneaking out and everybody knew right away?
Well, you know what? There's always whether it's golfing or you went to you know, hang down by the beach somewhere in Miami or you're sitting out on a deck having lunch or something. I mean, you know, the guys are always going to snag you. You can't hide the sunburns and the things that go on like that. But yeah, there's always guys that like to get out and you'd land in a city and they would be like rushing from the hotel to get to the golf course. And sometimes when you're in the Florida area, stuff like that, guys would jump on a course and after a morning skate and then then come right from the golf course, right to the game. And get dressed up and go. And I just wasn't one of those guys. I couldn't shut it off, turn it on and off like that. I just had the one switch that I kind of ran on. But not, hey, you know what? Those guys, oftentimes, they play pretty guilty. They show up and they play well.
Yeah, my definition of playing guilty is like after a long Saturday night and I got like an 8 a.m. tee time. That's a little different than what they're doing.
Yeah, it's different when people are chasing you, trying to kill you.
Yeah, it seems like you did a lot of that in your career. So we've actually come up with a little bit of a game here that we want to play with you. So this is a game. It's like what the premise is. You have $1,000 on the line, all right? So you either have to play this former teammate of yours in a round of golf for $1,000 or you have to try to beat them up in a fight on ice. So I'm going to give you a bunch of names. And you're going to choose either to play them in golf or fight them on the ice. Sounds good?
All right.
All right, we're going a tough one right off the bat. You got Cam Neely.
Oh, golf.
Not a golfer, Cam?
Well, just don't want to fight him.
That's fair. Yeah. Mike Gartner.
I'd rather lose the $1,000 in golf than get $40 in dental work.
All right, Mike Gartner.
Oh, you know what? I certainly play him in golf. Such one of the nicest guys I have ever had the pleasure of playing with. Would never want to anywhere be any kind of fight with Mike. Mike's a salt to the earth guy. I remember moving into Washington, is building a deck on the back of my house, a new home that my wife and I had just bought, and there's Mike with his work belt on, helping me build my deck, and just a super guy.
I'm eager to hear this one, but I think I might know the answer already. Dale Hunter.
I'd love to scrap with Hunts. Hunts was my roommate on the road. Dale and I drove together to practice. We roomed together. Lots of laughs, lots of fun, and I probably owe him a couple of knuckle chucks. So yeah, I'm not saying I win the fight with him because he's one dirty hombre, but I'll tell you, I'd be a lot of laughs.
I'm going way off the board here, Joseph Stumpel.
Wow. Oh, geez. Joey, another really nice guy, super nice guy, and I just don't ever see us getting to an escalated point where we'd ever even come close to fisticuffs, so I'd say we'd play some golf.
All right, Rob Blake.
Oh, golf all the way. Blakey's one of my favorite people. You know, we both went to Bowling Green. We both wore the same number at Bowling Green. You know, they retired our sweater together along with Kenny Morrow. The three of us went in together. It's one of my nice. Most cherished things that's happened to me in hockey. You know, Rob's, of course, a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. Such a fantastic player. Probably, the best player maybe to come out of Bowling Green all the way around. Stanley Cup champion, won Olympic gold medals, a Hall of Famer. Just a wonderful teammate, a wonderful leader. All around good person, and just one of those guys that just love being around, and certainly looking forward to anytime I get a chance to hang with him, especially for 4.5 hours when we could be on a golf course. I would take that anytime.
All right, we got two more for you. This one's off the board. Dominic Hasek.
Knuckle chucking.
Not the most...
And would enjoy it.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's been known not to be the most popular teammate, especially as a defenseman. I'm sure you heard him yelling at you for years.
Yeah, over-unders all night long.
All right, this should be a good one. Big E, Eric Lindros.
Well, Eric, first of all, I would not want to be in a contained space throwing punches. The biggest, most strongest people I've ever met in my life. I mean, him and Zdeno Chara are the two guys that I, you know, like just totally massive, strong people, you know, and really loved my time with Eric. You know, Eric was a real, real great teammate and really enjoyed playing with him. So I would say I would take my chances on the golf course and see if I could dismantle him out there.
That's awesome. So we got a couple more things we want to go over with you. Your son mentioned you are obsessed with these Ping I2 irons that you had forever. And he said every time you talk about golf, you bring up these Ping I2 irons. I love talking about Ping anytime I can because I was the 2014 Fitter of the Year. I don't bring it up often. You can clearly tell the sarcasm in my voice. Let's hear about these Ping I2 irons because it sounds like you finally retired them.
Well, the thing was, 25 years ago, you know, the Player Association and Ping, and so when you wanted to, you just you know sent in to Ping your specifics, and they would send you some clubs, and they'd engrave your name on them and everything. And at the time, you know, I saw these beryllium Ping clubs that I loved, and you know, people sometimes know beryllium. It's a copper look, right? It's a copper, shiny copper look. And I thought, you know, I'm going to get these beryllium clubs. And I got them. They got delivered to me with a bag and had my name on it and everything. And I used these clubs for close to 25 years. I've never changed the grips on them. I just used them. And I totally loved the optically. I loved them. I loved the way they felt. I loved the softness, how they struck the ball. The beryllium is a softer alloy. But the problem with it was very poisonous, and it was affecting the people and the plants that were building in these golf clubs, so they had to basically discontinue them. So these beryllium clubs no longer exist. They're very hard to find. If you see them on eBay or whatever, they're usually snatched up very quickly, and people pay a lot of money for them. And I was using them for over 25 years, and then last year I was at a driving range, and the head of my 3-iron flew off my club and went about 150 yards down into the driving range. So I made everybody stop and everyone go out and look for it because they didn't want to lose it. We found it, and that was my first thing. And I said, okay, I better start thinking about retiring these clubs soon. Maybe it's time to put them away. And I went to Lockmarch, was swinging in the rough. I caught a root in the ground, snapped my sand wedge, which came up and hit me in the chin. And I think that was the last straw. I was like, okay, these got to go away. So I retired my clubs. As Kevin Hame told me to do, he says, you take these clubs, you pour them in a bucket of Coke overnight, and it'll bring them back to pristine look. The Coke takes it right back to beryllium, back to its shiny copper. So I put them in a couple of jars of Coke, cans of Coke, soaked them in there, got up the next morning. They were mint condition. I put them in a bag and put them in my basement and retired them. And Kevin set me up with my first set of clubs in over 25 years, a set of Callaways that I absolutely love and have been playing with them. So it was a big change for me, but it was a change for the better. The technology, obviously, so much better 25, 26 years ago. But, yeah, the kids get a hoot out of it, the old relics, but never change the grips. And I tell you this, if I handed you a club with those grips, you would not think, you would not think those were 25-year-old grips. They still seem fine.
That's crazy. Well, we'd be remiss without asking you about your relationship with Bob Cole and working with Bob Cole over the years and maybe what he meant to you in your career.
Anytime you have a chance to play with a legend, and I've had a chance in my lifetime to play with a few of them, you know, and I mentioned Ray Bourque and Rob Blake and Mike Gartner and
Joseph Stumpf,
and, you know, Eric. Yeah, no, yeah. Well, Joseph was a heck of a player. I wouldn't put him in that category, but I mean, but I really thoroughly look at Bob Cole as a legend in the game and a person that I grew up listening to. He transcends hockey. His voice is hockey. When I had the opportunity to work with Bob, it was incredible to be able to sit in a booth and go retro, go back to the, you know, take it back. I mean, I work with people and, you know, for a long time and different play-by-play guys, but when you go with Bob, you got to take it back in time. And, the game is done very differently with Bob, and I enjoy doing it with him. And, no one loves the game more than Bob Cole does. And I know that Bob is not doing games anymore, but it's, you know, he would love to be, and there's no doubt about it. It's hard to stop something that it's all you know, And certainly one of the things in my hockey career as far as playing and broadcasting and all that, that I'm really thrilled to have been able to do. And certainly wish Bob nothing but the best. His family is wonderful. His kids have the opportunity to meet his kids and stuff, and just really, really good, solid people.
Well, you're right. This will be our first year of my lifetime where Bob won't be on Saturday Night Hockey. Going into the season, what are your thoughts on the year? You know, a lot of big storylines coming out of Canada. Probably the best chance in my lifetime for the Leafs to win a cup, and the least likely chance Ottawa has to come even close to the playoffs. But what are your thoughts on the season before we wrap it up?
You know, as far as Canadian teams are concerned, you know, I think obviously we'd like to see Edmonton take some steps forward. I think Dave Tippett will be a big help there. Not that I think the other coaches didn't try or give their best at doing this, but I think having played with Dave and knowing Dave, I think he's the right voice there that I know personally, that I think he'll interact well with the star players and the role players, because he was a good, solid supporting cast role player. So I think I'd like to see Edmonton do well. Calgary, you know, I think they had a real good run last year. I almost see them taking a bit of a step back before they take the next step forward. I think sometimes when you have that good run, I think sometimes, you know, you forget how hard you have to work to get there. But certainly a good team that should make the playoffs.
You're killing Scotty right now. He's a big Flames fan. He's dying here.
I agree.
I mean, I'm just giving you my opinion, which is only my opinion. You know, Toronto's got to get out of the first round. If they don't get out of the first round, it's going to be a disappointing season again. You know, if they don't, I think that puts a lot of question onto Mike Babcock. And whether or not he's the right guy moving forward. The Senators, we all know it's going to be a challenge for them, but I do think they'll be very exciting. They've got some great young talent, and if Anderson can play like he's capable of playing, I think they can do some damage here and there, but it's going to be a tough one for them for sure. But, you know, Montreal missed it by a point. They're going to be in tough. They still don't have that number one centerman that I think they need. Carey Price, a huge question mark. You know, he's had some off years, injuries, and some off years. Can he piece it back together and be the Carey Price that we know? If so, they will have a chance to get in. Excitement, Vancouver. I think they tied up Besser, and although he had a concussion today, but they've tied him up, and they've got some good young talent. That Peterson is an incredible player. So I think Canadians should be excited, and I hope they all get in. I know it's pretty tough, but I'm always cheering for all the Canadian teams to get in the playoffs.
Well, we really appreciate that breakdown. We're looking forward to this season of hockey. Unlike the golf season, there actually is an off season, which we've talked way too much about on here. What's the first night we can hear you calling the game for CBC or Sportsnet?
Yeah, I'm going to be, I believe it's October 5th. It's a Saturday night. I'm going to be doing the game in Ottawa, and I'm fortunate enough to start at home, which is a great spot to be. And then I'm off to Buffalo, and then Arizona, and then Washington, and there you can call me Suitcase again. So it's
there you go.
Well, we know one thing. The clubs are coming with you to Arizona, that's for sure, this time around. Gary, we appreciate this more than you know. Thank you very much. Have an awesome year out on the road, and hopefully you get to some more southern places this year. Get you out of the East Coast. Maybe you should send an email to those higher-ups over at CBC Sportsnet.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. All right, lads, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary Galley, for joining us on the podcast. Big thing that he did was he mentioned every single course that you could ever go to in Ottawa.
That was fantastic.
Gary goes, clearly plays wherever he can. We are having a good laugh with Gary about that. And fun fact, our dogs came from the same litter, so we're pretty much related in some sort there.
In some strange way.
Strange way. But Gary's a great guest.
Fantastic.
Clearly this guy's obsessed with golf, and who plays golf for 25 years without switching the grips on your club? Like, I don't know about you. I think I switch at least twice a year.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. And actually, when he was mentioning that, you know, his golf, the head of his club went flying, I thought he was going to say that the club itself went flying based on 25-year-old
grip. Disintegrated.
Pretty much. You know, he was the nightmare guy that, you know, when we worked in retail, that all of a sudden showed up with the grips that were 25 years old.
Oh,
and you're like,
man,
I got to take these things off.
Dude, and you would peel them off, and it would take you half an hour to peel each club. And then you'd have, like, I have my hands in front of me. I can see the little black grit that was on your hands.
Exactly.
And the Ping ones were the worst too, like, because I think their grips just somehow lasted that long. And you know what, thank you for not making them last that long, but I just remember you couldn't wash their hands. It was on your hands forever. Shout out to, like, the guys that, you know, my former coworkers are still doing grips these days, because I don't envy that side of things.
No, and thanks, Gary, for retiring those clubs finally.
Yeah. I don't know about you too, like, when back in your day of working the shop, what were you doing to put grips on? Because we used to use, like, this mineral solvent type stuff, and it would just destroy my hands. I would wear gloves, it would go through the gloves and destroy them. Your guys say they'd pour gasoline. Like, what did you do back in the day?
We were used Varisol back in the day or whatever. I mean, there's a few times that, you know, you go into a shop or whatever, guys were using gas or whatever, but you just want to stay away from that for sure. But you never knew what people were doing to get them out of there. But yeah, there's frankly a lot better, more environmentally sensitive stuff now that they make use of. Some of that stuff, you think about it. Well, I think about it. You know, I used to refinish woods and things like that, and we think of all the urethane, all the polyurethane used to use, and all those other chemicals and stuff like that. Granted, you know, good fan systems and stuff like that, but even the graphite fibers and all that stuff, I mean, thankfully that era is over for sure.
Definitely explains a few things that you have going
on. Yeah, I mean,
on,
it might have. Sure. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, fall golf is here. We've talked about the fashion side of things. I'm big in the fashion side of things. Everyone's coming out with their new fashion lines. You know, I was just on Levelwear's website. Had to end up picking some stuff up. Just picked up a nice new pair of FootJoys, ready to go for the year. I'm ready to roll and all these nice fall fashion stuff.
You know, it's September, right?
Yeah, I know, but it's a new season for me. Summer,
you're like the PGA Tour. It's a new season,
it's
right?
It's a new season that it never ends, and I just want to look good out there. I got my, you know, those pants that you bought at the spring that it got real too hot. Now you're like, I got to wear these now. So I'm ready for fashion, but soon we're going to want to head somewhere to go play.
Yeah, for sure.
But before we head to down somewhere south, like, where do you enjoy playing the most in the fall? Obviously, for me, the Muskokas, you can't really beat. It is a very short season in the fall.
It is, yeah. The season does wrap up pretty quickly there. So, you know, if you're going to get up there and see that fall color, you got to get up there and do that as quickly as possible. I mean, all those parts of, you know, Ontario are really great to see. Collingwood up in that area as well. I did a fall road trip a couple years up there. A couple of years ago, Jeff and I went up there, the publisher from Flagstick, and we did a little tour up there, and that was good to see. Cape Breton, always a favorite. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we've talked about Cabot. A lot of people talk about Cabot, but, you know, Highlands Lynx, just getting up there and seeing the fall colors. I mean, you've got massive elevation up there, so just the drives are spectacular. You know, just seeing those canopies of the forest and the multi colors, pretty incredible. And like I said, you've got the elevation so that when you're taking those big winding roads, you know, you can see for miles, and you can see all those trees, and that's a great spot just to play some fall golf.
I think the time of year to do Cabot might be around now, where it's still, you got the condition of the course in the summer conditions still, but it's going to be cold. The wind coming off
and
the
windy
ocean.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. I saw some pictures last week, a couple of people out there, and you know, they probably had two or three rain suits on. They had their carp mitts on, their toque on there, but you know, you still have fun when you go do that. I mean, there's
get
just
the
some
flask going.
Yeah, there's something about it. I mean, I've done fall road trips for, like I mentioned, Jeff going up to Collingwood or whatever. We've done fall road trips for 20 years, and we've done everything from, you know, Virginia. We've done Scotland, all that stuff as well. But a lot along the eastern seaboard of the U.S., obviously seeing those trees. West Virginia that you mentioned, we've been down there a couple times, and it's really spectacular. We head down along the Appalachian Trail there, and you see everything that's down there. It's pretty pretty neat to see this time of year. And you can go a little further south there.
Gets a little bit warmer weather-wise.
But, you know, so if you want to...
just there a week ago, it was 31 degrees.
Right, exactly. So it stretches a little longer. So if you're going to get out to, you know, maybe the Adirondacks, Lake Placid, down the Rochester area, the Finger Lakes and stuff like that, you're going to have to do that probably in the next 2-3 weeks or so. But you're going to get rewarded with really good course conditions. Colors are spectacular. And like I said, the courses are not quite as busy this time of year, and something worth going to for sure.
I think what we got to do is tell the wives we have to go on some business, and we got to head to Cabot, and then maybe do a little East Coast swinging back. You know, maybe like a 5-day thing. It's just
5 days.
Just business, right? Yeah. Like your kids in school. Your kids in school. Like, I mean, what else? You're good. We're fine. Everything will be okay. I think we got to try that out. We'll see how that goes. We'll get back to you on next podcast to see how our pitch went to our wives about going to Cabot Links. The winter's coming.
Yeah, it is.
Where this year, for myself, I'm going to head to Arizona. Me and a couple buddies are planning to go down to the Phoenix area and play some golf. Where do you want to go this year? Where do you think you're going to head to play some golf this winter?
I'm not quite sure yet. I usually have a lot of trips booked up, but, you know, if I look at different areas that I like to go, obviously I mentioned, you know, down the East Coast. Vegas has been popular with me in late October and November the last bunch of years. I managed to get down there for an event called the Ryder's Cup Mesquite in Nevada as well. Phoenix, great spot. Love Phoenix. Love the desert.
Good Mexican food too.
Awesome. There's just about everything. Phoenix is just a golf mecca. It really is. You know, you've got every aspect of golf that you could possibly want. You know, it's not for everyone as far as the desert golf courses, but, you know, it's nice when they get the golf ball running there. Just don't get off the fairways because there's not a lot of help there. There's some restrictions in that area as far as how much fairways they can have. I think it's 43.
You got to watch out. There's a couple friends you don't want to meet in those areas.
As David Faraday would say, Mr. No Shoulders is what he calls the snakes that end up down in there.
You.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful spot. And then along the East Coast, too, when you head down a little further south, a lot of people go to Myrtle Beach, but and, you know, further up the Virginia Beach, Ocean City, that sort of areas as well. But I love, you know, heading just south of there. Hilton Head Island's great. Brunswick Isles, Hilton Head Island, lots of great spots along the Georgia coast.
What about Key West? Have you ever been down there? They have good golf down in Key West area. I've been down to Key West, and it's beautiful, but you know, I just don't know of golf in that area. Is there anything?
I don't know if there's actually anything right along Key West because, I mean, it's just too small of an area.
It is pretty small, but
I can't say I've ever been, unfortunately.
You know, if you're in Florida, though, you got to do that. Have you ever done that drive down
Key West? I have not, unfortunately.
Oh, one of the best drives ever. We were down in West Palm Beach for a little bit of a golfing trip at one point.
Yeah.
Ended up driving down to Key West just for the day, take the day off, ran a nice little convertible, you know, when it's way too cold to actually have to top down. But
it's a little flat for me down in the south end of Florida, though, as far as the golf courses.
Yeah,
but yeah, I guess for a drive, it's certainly good
worth
that
it. But yeah, Florida, you can't really go wrong down there. There's, you know, some nice golf courses. But yeah, Arizona's coming up for us. I want to hear more about.
You've been to Arizona?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
One of my favorite golf courses I played, Superstition Mountain.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Very private track. Jack Nicklaus design. See, look at that. I'm just a design guy now. I got design names because it's, you know, the most famous guy of all time.
Just dropping them.
Yeah, exactly. Played that track. What a beautiful, beautiful track. 36 holes. But there's a lot of great golf courses in that area. I'm drawing a blank on a couple of the public ones that most people go to, but let's hear it. Where should we go if we're down in the Phoenix area?
Sunrise is actually pretty interesting up in Fountain Hills. It's a decent golf course to play that way. I'm trying to think some of the other ones that I've played over the years.
Played the Raven before.
Yeah, Raven's pretty good. A couple of Canadians hang down there doing some coaching.
Where did they used to play the Wells Fargo? I played that track before down in there. The ASU course, I believe, they used to play there. I'm drawing a blank.
Is that the Karsten course?
I believe. No, the Karsten course is a different course. That's the actual new
one.
Yeah,
I haven't played that one.
They used to have the Wells Fargo at this course. Awesome track. Wells Fargo I don't know where they're playing the Wells Fargo nowadays. I don't even know if they have a tournament anymore.
It's on the East Coast now.
Yeah, either way. But yeah, we used to play that. I played that track quite a bit. nice track. I personally love desert golf. Anybody that says, you know, they don't like it, I don't really get it. It's different. There's beautiful views, a lot of mountains in the background. Yeah.
Did you ever play Greyhawk? That's another great one.
Yes, Greyhawk.
36 hole.
Yeah, Greyhawk
there,
is where they used to host the Wells Fargo down there. Phil Mickelson's home track back in the day.
Yeah.
It's really weird. They almost have like a Jesus but Phil Mickelson poster on
right,
the wall
exactly.
when you walk in.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a little bit creepy, but also it's Phil.
Yeah, it is Phil. I kind of have an odd story of that, actually.
Let's hear
playing
it.
Well, you know, just for the sake of stories. We were down there actually playing at Greyhawk, and we had a buddy with us from the Ottawa area, and he's got a place in Tucson. We're going to go down to Tucson. We're going to play Star Pass down there. That was the big plan. We're going to finish up at Greyhawk and go down there. Unfortunately, there was a massive sandstorm that came in and closed down the highway between Phoenix and Tucson. Sadly, there was a couple of accidents and stuff, so they closed down the highway, and we thought, what are we going to do? So we parked ourselves. We were supposed to head out of town a couple days after that, out of Phoenix. And we're like, okay, well, what are we going to do for a couple days? Well, we can golf here. So, okay, fine. Well, you know, we'll check in at some hotel and a casino place or whatever, and we'll see what's up. So we get down there, and then we happen to flip on the TV, and the World Long Drive Championship is on in Las Vegas. And we're like, that's only 5 hours away. It's tonight.
And you get an hour back.
Exactly.
On your drive, yeah.
So, yeah, we pulled an audible, jumped in the car, called a couple people on the way, hooked up some tickets, drove into town into Vegas, literally booked a car or booked a hotel out of the car, you know, just on an app or wherever like this, pulled in, I don't know, probably Luxor or something like that. It was probably like $35 a night.
Nice.
Ran out to the Las Vegas Speedway where they were hosting it that year. I think it was 2013 maybe. Tim Burke won it that year. Ran out there. Saw him win the championship, bust 1.427 to finish it up. You know, go back, enjoy the town a little bit. I think we, you know, get to bed or whatever, 3, 4 a.m., wake up first thing in the morning.
Day.
Yeah, exactly. back to Phoenix, back to the hotel. We'd booked the hotel for that night before or whatever. And yeah, we just, we made something out of it. But there's certainly lots of places to enjoy golf out there. And, you know, there's lots of things that can happen. So
that's good to know, because we'll be down there. We got a little buddy's trip planned. So, you know, Vegas, 5 hours. Why not, right? Why not? We're going to talk about a lot of golf trips coming up. We're going to get a lot of travel people on this podcast because I'm sure you're getting bombarded with questions of where to go. We'll get to that eventually, but keep sending Scott messages on Instagram and on Twitter because we want to talk about it. And we want to know where you guys recommend as well because, you know, there's more than Florida. There's more than
yeah,
Phoenix. Where are these hidden gems that we need to go to? We're going to talk all about that. The LPGA is back this week. We would be remiss not to bring that up. They're in Indianapolis, I believe.
They are. They're playing at the Brickyard Crossing for the Indy Women in Tech Championship. So it's nice to have the LPGA back after the Solheim Cup break. Some players obviously took the weeks off. Others didn't. Nelly Korda won over in France. She won on the LET Tour during the break. Nasa Hachioka won a major on the Japanese LPGA Tour, the Konica Minolta Cup. But they're playing this week. And four Canadians in the field. Brooke Henderson is there. We've got Brittany Marchand and Elena Sharp and AC Tangay as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Brooke Henderson did have a charity event in Ottawa last week. Flagstick was there to cover it. Joe McLean that works for us. It was a fundraiser involving Skechers. They invited some members of the Smith Falls Golf Club, the Ottawa Hunt Club as well. You know, they raised over $27,000.
These two, Brooke and Brittany and that whole family, they're just saints, top to bottom. Awesome people. So, nobody says bad things about the Hendersons. You can't. They're just awesome. Like, Brooke, she could have done anything with her weeks off, and here she is hanging out with the kids. Brooke being Brooke.
Yeah, it was for sure. And then Brooke and Brittany were there, and I think that means a lot to them. You know, she said it to us many times before that, you know, that was her before.
Yep.
And she knows how important it is to have those heroes and have those role models. And, you know, a lot of the other players will do that as well. And that's one of the great parts of the LPGA Tour. A lot of these players give a lot of themselves and to try to motivate others. And it was great to see Brooke and Brittany to do that and not only raise some money, you know, in support of juniors, but some other charities as well.
Well, you were actually out, speaking of hanging out with juniors, you were out today at an elementary school tournament, and it sounds like you got fans everywhere, people yelling at you. They love the podcast. I love it. Who was yelling at you? Some teacher?
Yeah, I went past one of the tee boxes, and Jamie Gaudette, shout out to him. His young son Connor, actually a fine player. He just said, "Hey, I like the podcast." So that was funny, the way to start the day. But just hanging out with the grade school kids. These are grade sixes, sevens, eights. Some of it's their first time having a golf tournament experience. But there's more than 90 of them there. I think it's the eighth year that the school board has had this tournament. It's just a scramble event. You know, really casual. You know, they have prize, they have one, you know, trophy or whatever. But most of the kids, you know, never been in a tournament before, and it's just fun to see, and it's nice to see them have those first experiences and realize how much fun it is, and go out there and just enjoy the day, have a few laughs, and then, you know, create a connection to golf, so that sometime in the future, if they don't just want to golf right away, that, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, somebody says to them, "Hey, do you want to play some golf?" Like, "Oh yeah, I've played golf before," and then away they go.
Exactly. I think it's a good time to wrap it up. Before we do, I want to give one last shout out. David Byrne, the man of the Pro-Am. This guy wins every single Pro-Am in Ontario. If he shows up at your Pro-Am, go home. Yeah, you're exactly not winning. He wins them all. He's got the T-Talk bump of Pro-Ams. And then he goes and works at a sushi place and makes drinks. This
That's awesome.
Listen to that podcast with David Byrne, former Big Break winner, every week Pro-Am winner in Ontario.
Muskoka Bay, I think he won this week.
Yeah, and a great place to go 60, play.
66 he shot up there or whatever. Wow. So, yeah, he's just crazy how talented he is, and obviously he's destroying the Pro-Am circuit this fall.
Is he ever. All right, folks, we're going to wrap it up there. Make sure you subscribe. Like us, rate us, give us feedback, do the whole thing. We want 5 stars always. But hey, if you're thinking we're 4 stars right now, you gotta do it. Just tell us why. We want to know why. We want some feedback. We want to make it better for everybody. We do appreciate it. Fall golf is here. Get on your quarter zips. Find those tight pants that you bought in the spring they're probably tighter now, and you might not be able to get that last button up because of all those beers you may have had on the course. Squeeze into them, because it's fall golf season. It's here. Get out before it's gone. Fall golf, the leaves are turning and your golf game's still there. So we'll see you out on the course. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Like to see my boat's lost in the ocean.